Is an archduke the highest level? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Could be a, there could be such a thing as like a Uber Duke. And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 55. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how you doing? This week, I watched the movie The Ruins, and you listened to the band Franz Ferdinand, their debut album.
It's a band, not a person? Like, that I thought it was a person with a backing band.
Yeah, we're going to listen to Franz Ferdinand. We're going to try not to restart World War I. It's going to be fantastic.
Oh, wow, I have so many questions. But before we get into any of that, how was your week, man?
It was a good week. I've been working on taking some of the songs that I wrote last month for February, album writing month, and trying to flesh them out, put them in a full band context. It's going very slowly, but I'm working on it. I'm doing it. And for the very first time today, I actually recorded live drums rather than using the auto drummer in GarageBand. So I played the drums for my song. I'm pretty excited about it. Even if it's like not as objectively quote unquote good as the, GarageBand auto drummer, I like the idea that I'm playing it live and it's actual recording, right? Because let's be honest, I'm not going to become like the male Taylor Swift. I'm not going to be like a giant success. I'm doing this for my own gratification and I want to learn how to do this thing. So I'm doing it.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I think all of us would probably appreciate the fact that the live drums are better than like AI, computer drums.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there are lots and lots of different ways to do drums. And I've never been attached to any particular method when I listen to something. Like, I know that some bands use drum machines. Heck, I used to listen to a bunch of industrial music. Those are almost always in the studio context. Those are drum machines. Those are programmed drums. They're sure when they perform live, like Nine Inch Nails or Ministry or whatever, they'll have a live drummer, although they'll often be supplemented with, recorded drum tracks. But when they're in the studio, those are almost always programmed drums. And I don't mind that, right? I just, because I'm doing this to like, keep my brain moving and learn new things and, like do the music myself, I was like, I want to do the drums. I want to learn this. And so today I recorded the drums for a song called Staying, and it's going to be the first song that I release officially after writing it last month during February album writing month.
So. Do they not have a clever like compression of that whole thing, like NaNoWriMo?
It's called FAWM. F-A-W-M, FAWM.
Oh, so it's an acronym,
FAWM. Yes, and they often turn FAWM, like to finish a song quickly without getting obsessed over the quality is called FAWMing it. Yeah, no, the deadline was approaching, and so I just FAWMed it, right?
I FAWMed it.
Yeah, and there's a person who's participating for the first time is called a FAWMling. So they have a bunch of cutesy little...
Oh, okay.
Yes, they have a bunch of cutesy little words that they have that incorporate FAWM. I just didn't want to lose our audience by starting to use the acronym without introducing it.
Oh, no,
nice job there.
Yeah, no, I was just curious myself, and so I'm glad that we elucidated ourselves and our audience to that whole thing. That's cute. I like that.
How was your week? The Oscars are tonight, so that's exciting.
Yeah. So you listening to this will of course know who won, but we don't yet. We'll be finding out. Although the word around Hollywood seems to think that it's a pretty foregone conclusion that it's going to be. I'm just going to say it. It's going to be Oppenheimer for movie and director. It's going to be Emily Stone. What's
Emma.
Her name? Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
Oh my God, that was not good. Emma Stone for Poor Things, which I really liked, by the way.
I've been meaning to watch it. Maybe I'll watch it tonight during the Oscars.
Yeah, okay, do that, because I agree that her performance is fantastic. And then for Best Actor, I think Ryan Gosling, or was he Best Supporting Actor?
I'm not sure which category he got nominated in.
Yeah, I feel like Best Actor, and I think that he deserves it. Although it is a stacked category,
yeah.
So lots of great performances. So I think there's going to be less surprises this year. But given that it has movies that are were really big hits, and like Oppenheimer was the third biggest movie of the year, which is crazy for a 3-hour historical drama. It hasn't happened since Titanic, and so.
You know, I would say
Oppenheimer didn't have any
next
hot,
year.
Young
next year
couple.
On the pod, like this year, we were in a big hiatus during Oscar season. But next year, I'd like to at least try to watch maybe the Best Picture nominees. We only watched Barbie, I think, of the Best Picture nominees last year, right?
Yeah, I watched Oppenheimer myself. The problem with it was I didn't see it before, and so I couldn't give it to you like in our normal routine because it wasn't one of my favorite movies.
Well, I would say sometimes it's okay to break the routine, especially I think it's fun to have this hook up with the Oscars a little bit. So next year, I think we should try to at least watch the Best Picture nominees.
There are 10 nominees, though, so you know.
Well, we could do it as like an episode where we watch like 2 or 3 of them a week or something like that. You know?
Oh, wow. That would be interesting.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, or we could just have a whole like decadal period where, you know, like episodes 160 through 170 are or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
there's lots of ways to do it.
New movies, anyway. So that'll be very exciting. I'm going to a party tonight as soon as we're done recording to watch the Oscars. It's been a big part of my life since I was a kid. Since I was in Wisconsin, I've watched the Oscars, yearning to be part of that world.
Yeah,
and so. It's still like that.
Yeah, well, and I think we should definitely. You've got your excitement about the Oscars last year got me. Like, I'm not gonna watch the Oscars this year. But the only reason I'm not gonna watch the Oscars this year is because I really haven't seen anything except for Barbie, and I feel kind of silly for
you know
watching it.
And one thing I do like is going back and watching Oscar winners. After the fact, like years later, and we're going to do that again for next week's episode.
Oh, exciting!
I'm going to give you an Oscar winner, and we'll revisit that, kind of in the mood of this whole season. So, this week I had a big week. I went and shot my episode of television, which I'll be able to tell you more about later, probably closer to when it airs. But man, was it exciting!
Oh,
it was
cool.
A very interesting experience. First, I had my agent. Make sure that I could bring Coco along. So this is the first set I've been to since I've had a dog. And it's funny because when I first got to LA, I had this dream of like bringing Dot with me to set all the time. And like, it's going to be in my contract that I have to be able to bring Dot to my, trailer. And by the time I actually shot something, well, I guess I had Dot when I was shooting things like Community and Pretty Little Liars, but I had roommates and boyfriends, and she was just happier being at home while I went to shoot. So, but now I didn't really have anyone to leave her with, so I had my agent ask if it was okay if I brought Coco to set. Not to set, but to my trailer. And so I kept her in the trailer, which was fine.
Fun.
I bought a big brand new dog bed for her to sleep in.
Uh-huh.
And so she had a fun time.
That's wonderful.
And man, I have some stuff to show you about this part. It's kind of crazy. But coming up, we have a big week, a big month in April, where not only this episode is probably going to air, but also the episode I did of a new show called Sugar on Apple TV, which the trailer just dropped this week with Colin Farrell. And in a day, it had 6 million views, this trailer. And,
oh, that's wonderful.
So I think it's going to be a big show, and I think that people are going to... it's nice because I'm in the first episode, so everybody's going to check it out and watch the first episode. So
It's
going to be pretty big for me, I think. And what else did I do? There was one other big thing, but... Oh, Well, bad news. New car that I just bought, I had to take back into the shop because it won't charge. And it won't charge correctly. And so I took it on Tuesday morning being like, hey, can we like get this fixed? And they're like, oh, you have to drop it off for 10 days just to be diagnosed.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, and it's under warranty. But during the diagnosis period, they don't give you a rental car, apparently. Even if it's a warranty repair, which Chevrolet, that makes no sense. I'm going to call you out right now because that is BS. And so a little bit
that's a long time to be without your car.
Especially when I had to drive up to Santa Clarita, which is a ways from me, and I can't get there without a car. So I had to wait to drop off the car until Saturday, which meant, you know, another 4 days where I wasn't being diagnosed. But now I'm without a car for, you know, however long it takes to diagnose and then repair. And who knows how long that's going to take.
Wow. Yeah. That's no fun.
I know. It's not. But anyway, it's not the end of the world. I'm fine with riding my bike around. And it seems as if the rain is all done for us for a while, although we've had a couple of big rainstorms. We had a thunderstorm, which is very rare for L.A. And that should all be done. Looks like sunshine for the next while, at least.
6 months.
And I'll be... Yeah, well, yeah, I do appreciate the unrelenting sunshine here in Los Angeles usually.
It's a real burden.
Yeah, so we should be fine. I should be fine to ride my bike around to work and whatnot for a while. So excited about that.
Well, that's great.
Let's put all that darkness behind us and get into the meat of the episode.
Let's get into the meat of the episode.
All right. Boy. We should shake things up and start with, what do you think?
Let's start with the music this week.
All right, tell me about Franz Ferdinand, who is...
I'm feeling confident about the music this week, because I'm giving you 2000s Scottish dance pop rock band Franz Ferdinand, named after, of course, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, whose assassination kicked off World War I. That's why the name seemed familiar to you. And
I mean, I knew that, but I thought it could have been likely that there was a person named Franz Ferdinand 70 years later who started a band.
That's like there's a band named Joseph Stalin, but it's just because his name is Joseph Stalin. And, you know, he was like, no, it's my name. I'm going to use it for the band. Yeah. And I don't think that
Stalin was a bad guy. I don't think we necessarily think that Franz Ferdinand was a bad guy. Right.
Literally, the only thing I know about Franz Ferdinand is that he got shot. That's the sum total of information I have about him. He's an archduke.
Yeah, I
don't even know what an archduke is. An archduke the highest level? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Sure.
Right.
Could be such a thing as like a Uber Duke.
I'll be honest. I don't even remember what he was archduke of. Anyways.
Switzerland?
Nah, Serbia.
No, that
maybe.
Doesn't make any sense. Austria. Austria. He was Austria.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Or Austria-Hungary. I think they were together at the time.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, anyway, is neither here.
I'm
this
assuming
is not
that he was shot
podcast.
By bad people, which started the war. And that's all we need to know.
Yeah,
so
that's all
this
we need
band,
to know. This
is
band.
Not a guy named Franz Ferdinand. It's a band.
It's a band named Franz Ferdinand.
Continue,
and
sir.
Their debut album is really fantastic. It's filled with a bunch of fun, upbeat, danceable, garage rocky songs. I really, really love it. I think this came out right around the same time as like The Strokes and a few other things that we've listened to. Interpol. I'm not sure what else, but a few things, right? And this, I think, really stands out as one of the best bands of the era in terms of, like, just sheer listenability and, like, earworms, things that just get into your head that you can't get out of it. My favorite song on here is a song called The Dark of the Matinee, although, to be fair, there is a probably more popular song called Take Me Out. I think Take Me Out was a bigger hit. But honestly, I don't think there's a bad song in here. And there's a bunch of really good ones. Just enough variety to keep it interesting, but it's all solidly in the same genre. So, So that's all I got. What do you have, Travis, other than a few minutes of a random rambling about history that you don't really understand?
So, you nailed a couple of things on here that I want to address. One is the idea of variety, where you said that there was just enough to keep it interesting. And I think that's something I noticed specifically, was that it was not as much variety as I would have liked, but it was like just enough variety to keep me engaged, you know, mentally and orally. Aurally, A-U-R, my ears.
I followed aurally. Right along. You really pronounced it well.
We are now recording this, so you could have seen me gesture to my ears to make it clear that I was referring to aurally. Anyway, so, but I will say that there are a couple of things that I struggled with. This album, and when it started, I was like, is this a playlist? Did Matthew put this together? And then this is the song that he chose as the first song? But no, it's an album. This is beyond your control. This was the way they presented it to the world. And the first song, a bunch of their songs start with like a preamble, right? Like an opening chapter that does not necessarily represent the style of the song. It's going to be slower. It's going to be a little more meandering. And then it's going to reach a break. And then all of a sudden, the beat's going to kick in and you're going to get your main song. And that was an interesting choice to have happen quite so often. People who like Take Me Out know that that is a part of that song. And that's kind of what I'm referring to. The other thing that made this album a little bit of an uphill battle for me was that the vocals, at least in my ear pods, sounded like they were being recorded in a way that added, not distortion like we've seen with like the Strokes or whatnot, but like an effect that made it sound like you were recording the voice coming off the radio a little bit. Right?
Oh, interesting. And
yeah, it is interesting because I did happen to listen to a little bit of one song, not on the earphones, but on just on the phone, like through the speakerphone. And I have an iPhone 14 Pro, which has a really good speakerphone, and it didn't sound at all like that, or at least not as much like that. But listening to it in my ears, it was something where once it started, it was very noticeable especially compared to the music that I usually like to listen to, where the vocals are really nice and clean and it's vocals first. This almost wasn't like that. And it was a thing where once it started, my brain kind of latched onto it and it put me in a defensive listening posture.
Yeah.
You know? So I was listening to it going, you know, what are you doing? You're going to have to win me over now, rather than starting with a really strong song and then sprinkling in these kind of vocal effects later.
Okay.
I don't know. So I think ultimately the question then becomes, did it win me over? Mm-hmm. And I think it did for the most part. But I don't think I'm going to come off with a score that is quite as indicative of what you expected for this.
Well,
problem.
I mean, so talk to us a little bit about what you liked or didn't like about the music, like the guitars, the voice. You know, like it is very upbeat.
So I'll tell you. Yes. Okay. So I appreciated a good beat, and there is the song that everybody knows is Take Me Out, and that one has, it's by far the most popular song they have on YouTube Music, and they you'll recognize it if you haven't listened to it before, and it does have a really good beat. And one of the things I did appreciate is that there is in general a lot of, like you said, danceable, upbeat music in this. And I actually found myself, when I was walking around listening to this, kind of bopping my head, like, you know, with the music. And I almost, you know, against my will, right? Like, unconsciously, just like it was, it does drive you to movement.
Must not dance.
Exactly. It's like I exist in the city from Footloose or wherever, or Dirty Dancing. You know, I have not seen any one of those songs. We started this podcast with the soundtrack to what, Dirty Dancing?
To Dirty Dancing, yeah.
And I've never seen any of those big dancing movies from the
80s. Honestly, I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't assign it to you for episode 50. I had that forgotten is interesting, that you right? hadn't seen it. Yeah.
Well, for episode 100, there we go.
You don't get to assign it to yourself, sir. That is not how this works.
There's a selection to be chosen from. There's Dirty Dancing, there's Footloose, there's one other
Flash
big...
Flash Dance.
Those are the three, yeah. I haven't seen any of them. Anyway... Franz Ferdinand, what are you doing, man? I wish it had been a little more vocals first. So that's just a thing for me.
Do you think that's fair? I mean, he doesn't have like a great voice, you know?
Yeah,
like he's a little sing speaky, I would say. Or shouty speaky.
Okay,
singy.
So that is that's a good question. Would I have disliked hearing his actual voice without being subdued by whatever recording setting they were using? Would it have made me more anti?
I think it might have. I think if this mix was more vocal forward, you would then be critiquing the actual voice.
Possibly. I can see that. I guess maybe I would have liked the opportunity. And here's what it is. It just put me in it's a thing that I generally don't like, and we know this, and it put me on it started me off, especially because it didn't start with a good beat, right? The first song.
That's true. The first song
intro,
doesn't really
kick in.
It
gets there. Yeah, it does get there, but not. It takes a while. And so I was listening to it with this kind of meandering music and the vocals that weren't really great and also edited so that they felt like they were coming through a radio. And so I think all of that just put me in that kind of negative space first. And I had to recover, which I think hurt the album's chances for me. On the second time through, I think I was still working my way up. And it got there. It's definitely better. Like I was worried when the album started that I was gonna have like a 4 or a 5 for you, and I was like, "Ooh, this is Matt's not gonna like that." But it did recover. It's better than that. How much better? We'll have to see. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I should talk a little bit. I mean, I gave a lot of it in the introduction, but to me, this is very hooky, very catchy, but still like enjoyable. And like, it doesn't feel fake to me, right? In the first song, they're singing, "Oh, it's so much better on holiday. We only work when we need the money." And that strikes me as like a very like early mid 20s attitude towards life, right? And the kind of thing that, especially in the UK, I've like known people to do, right? I don't know what it is about life in Europe that allows people to just be like, "I'm going to take a gap year and backpack around South America or whatever." But it feels like a lot of them do it, right? And that is, you know, that sort of freedom of youth and sort of, I guess, probably government support of some kind, right? Like knowing that you're not going to fall in a hole and ruin the rest of your life is pretty allows you that freedom.
One of the nice things I think that they have is the government also is on board with the idea of life first, right?
Sure.
Life, like happiness, is an important component of a country's success. And so,
which as Americans we recognize is completely wrong. But, you know, that's a thing they believe over there.
Well, our government doesn't recognize it, at least, even if we do.
Yes. Yeah. But anyways, the thing that I just really go back to with this is like, these are songs that like I will sing afterwards when I'm in the shower or I'm like not listening to the album anymore. They're earworms. They get stuck in my head. And I think the other thing that I really like is they're very good at a type of songwriting that I wish I could do, which is that they give like these full sentences. Like, I'm very much the type of songwriter who like has three words, four words, three words, four words, right? And they're good songs. Like, I like them, but I'm always jealous of people who can write like whole sentences and melodies that weave in and out of the instrumentation. And they're really, really good at that. This music, they always kind of, you know, we talk about landing the plane, right? Like, the melody will like go along, and then right when the, you know, right when the beat for the chorus kicks in, they'll like land the plane, and it all makes sense, and it's a good rhyme, and it's not cheesy. And I really, as a songwriting venture, this is really enjoyable for me, you know? So that's kind of my deal with this music.
I can see that, and I think that one of the nice things is, I agree with you, the songwriting was solid, and there was a song, I do want to point out, maybe my favorite song besides Take Me Out was a song called Michael.
And, I just found
the music to it really good, and the beat, and it almost seemed like a really obviously queer song, like it was just talking about this hot guy, Michael, on the dance floor.
Yeah. Come and dance with me, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah, so and it hooked me musically and also lyrically. So,
yeah,
and told a story, and I do appreciate that, and a story you can follow along with. So that's good.
That's
good stuff. Yeah,
cool. Yeah. Anything else you want to say?
I think that I've been a little busy this week, so I maybe would have listened to this a third time through to give it a really fair shake, but and I may yet do that, but
well, you know, that's actually a fascinating thing to say, because ordinarily you don't listen to things a third time through, and when you started this, you were convinced that you might not make it through. Not that you might not make it through, but that you might give it a 4 or 5, right? So, you know, something, music that's a 4 or 5 is definitely not going to be something you even bother to listen to three times. So,
yeah. And I will, I'll say that your description and your, evaluation of this is helping to inform my feelings a little bit. Because it's, I'm not always focused on the things that you are in music. And so that's one of the things I like about this whole project, is that you have a more nuanced perspective on music than I do. And so I appreciate
that. I'll say when this album came out, I listened to it a lot, like a lot, right? So this is, you know, it's funny. I don't know if this is in my big album list or whatever, but it should be, right? If I didn't put this in there, I should have it. It's very much one of my favorite albums. And I'll say the band itself is still going. And I'm not up on them in the last 10 years or so, but they released 2 albums after this in the 2000s. And those are also really, really good. Franz Ferdinand is still knocking it out of the park. They're just maybe not at that sort of Take Me Out level, which is like breaking through into the zeitgeist and getting in a bunch of movies and that sort of thing. Yeah.
I do like that this was, you know, for 2004, this is a pretty, this is kind of coming out of the period where we talked about where things had to be like serious and sad in order to be taken seriously.
Yeah, this is all part of that movement towards things that were not necessarily like, oh, my life sucks so much and I hate myself and I want to die, right?
Yeah, which I do appreciate. All right.
Yeah.
All that's helping it. It's all good stuff.
Travis, you know I love to inform your opinion. What do you give it? This is going to be a tough one for you, because you
really is.
I think you had a number in mind, and I think you're struggling with it.
I did have a number in mind, and
it's okay. Give it the number that you wanted to give it. It's okay.
I want to give it I'm going to give it a 7. The number I had in mind was a 6. I'm going to give it a 7 because I do appreciate the upbeat feeling. And like, this is a, This is something I would have, I probably would have loved to listen to this on a hike. I didn't have a chance to do any, do hiking this week. So, cause the rain and then you know, not working. So
yeah, that can be a problem.
I would love to have this, you know, as I'm just popping around with my weights, just walking.
Yeah. I do wonder if you might not have, given this one score higher if you had been hiking during it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll keep it on the playlist. Cause I usually delete stuff that I don't love.
Nice. Okay.
And but I'll keep it on there and in the library. All right. Then maybe listen to it on a hike.
All right. Well, this is a 9 for me. I really, really love this album. I've listened to it a lot. I would say if I had to knock it for anything, the thing that keeps it from being perfect for me is like maybe it can be a little like glib or like have like sort of a devil may care attitude sometimes that I'd like them to maybe be just like a tiny bit more like serious, like dig into like sometimes I feel like they're putting on a persona for this. And I would like to just maybe get into like the reality of their experience maybe a little bit more. I think it's why I like that first song so much is because I feel like that's a like a real thing. And maybe a lot of times they avoid that a little bit. So that's why I would give it a 9. But musically, this is really, really fantastic. So, yeah.
That's interesting because I do that too. Like, ever since I've been on YouTube, for example, I do put on a persona when I'm presenting myself. And one of the things I like is putting out happiness and joy into the world. Mm-hmm. And I kind of usually keep my more serious, like, stuff to myself. So
Tears of a Clown.
I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, let's move along.
Yeah, Travis, go ahead and tell me about this interesting, interesting horror movie, The Ruins.
I am very fascinated to see what you think of this because there's a lot
that I feel like I'm being set up a little bit.
I know that there's a lot you don't like about it, but rewatching this movie, there's a lot that I really love. This is a movie from 2008 that is kind of classified as a natural horror film. It was directed by Carter Smith in his directorial debut and based on a book written by Scott Smith. I don't know if they're related now that I say that out loud. And they are, it stars...
I mean, to be fair, Scott Smith sounds like a made-up name, like a generic name generator, you know?
Yeah, possibly. But it stars Jenna Malone in one of her, not early roles, but she had already been acting since a kid. She played the young Ellie in Contact. So like the young Jodie Foster character, and also so she's been acting since she was a child. But also Sean Ashmore, who came from the X-Men series and did this, and then also Jonathan Tucker, who is someone I wasn't aware of, but he's got a solid career, but not like super famous. But he kind of the lead guy, and also Laura Ramsey as their fourth friend, and
she's the fourth friend.
I'm not familiar with her work, but here's the thing. The acting in this horror movie is pretty solid to my eye. And it's about these friends who are vacationing in Mexico, and they meet this kind of hot German guy. And the German guy is like, hey, I've got to go out to see this archaeological site because my brother went out and I haven't heard back from him, so I got to go look for him. Do you want to join me? And they're like, sure, could be fun. And so they all go to this... which turns out to be a pyramid, and yes. The pyramid is covered with vines. It's all grown over, and the second they get there, they are surrounded by natives who basically force them onto the pyramid, and they won't let them leave, and they do that by killing one of their companions, like, immediately, and they're like, oh, and so the seriousness of it is set up immediately, but we don't really know why for a while. And but it turns out that the pyramid is home to a species of carnivorous vines, and the natives are trying to make it so that they don't get out into the world, so they don't escape. And I think there's some backstory about how the pyramid was the site of a bunch of sacrifices, and maybe that's how the vines came to be. I don't know if there's some sort of supernatural element. I don't think so. They really kind of direct it as if they're just a naturally occurring species that wants to kill, or not even want to kill. Only one character is actually killed by the vines. The rest of them are killed by people. But anyway, all that is just to say I found this movie well shot, beautifully shot. The special effects are really solid. It's very psychological. The tension is very real, especially once we get to know what the danger actually is. And I thought it was really well done. What did you think?
I would say that it is... I would say it's partially true that it's well done, right? This movie starts off... as a straight ripoff of The Descent or vice versa. I mean, like, the story beats at the beginning of this thing are very, very similar to The Descent, you know, where you're being introduced to this group of young people who maybe are in a little over their heads and they make some decisions that maybe aren't the best decisions, and they end up at a very, very dangerous place. And then there's a few things that I like about this better than The Descent, right? So you remember how one of my problems with The Descent was, like, there was no, like, local lore about, hey, there's a bunch of monsters that come out of the ground and eat people or bears or whatever periodically, right? Here, there are natives, and they are very, very aware of the problem. Now, why the natives haven't contacted the local government, or a scientist, or a guy with a flamethrower. I don't know, right?
Yeah, there's
not really any explanation whatsoever for why the natives have decided that the best way to combat this thing is to surround the pyramid anytime anyone approaches it and force them into the vines. Like, that's really left very,
right,
very...
Right, not one of them learns English just in case. I mean, I suppose visitors don't have to be English, but...
Maybe, you know, we should set up a perimeter of some kind. Post a sign. I think my favorite unintentionally funny moment of this movie is the kids are trying to figure out how to get to the ruins, and they decide that they need a taxi, and they're like... Taxi guy, we got to go here. And the taxi guy is like, no, man, I won't go there. And he goes, $40. And he's like, okay. Right? Like, supposedly this guy knows.
Well, he didn't say that he won't go there. What he said was, that place is bad, in more of a, like, a, you shouldn't go there.
I think you're splitting hairs. Okay.
No, but I think they were careful about him.
No, but what I'm saying is he knows that these people are going to get themselves killed. And he's like, well, I mean, for $40, have fun, right? Like, that's very cold. That's very cold. So
yeah, I don't think it's unusual in Mexico to have their own best interest. People have their own best interest at heart. I get what you're
saying. I'm not saying it's unrealistic. I'm saying it's funny. That's what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, I love Jenna Malone. I think I'm really glad that you introduced her to our audience, because I absolutely know that Jenna Malone was young Ellie in Contact. It's one of my favorite movies. And
oh, really?
I love Contact so much. Oh, you're kidding. Oh, it's so good.
I am kidding. I've seen it. I've seen it a few times.
Okay. Anyways, point is whenever I see Jenna Malone pop up, I don't know why she hasn't had a better career. I think she's a really fantastic actress, and I really like her, but she hasn't. Sometimes she ends up in very, very low-budget horror movies. I would agree with you. Like, it's well shot. It's well acted, but you know, I think it does feel very formulaic most of the time. The best moments of this movie are sort of the unusual things that the way that this monster kills, right? And I mean, maybe that's often the appeal of a horror movie, is like, oh, here's the formula, but check out this really cool thing. And this these vines do that thing where they like get underneath the skin and they start sort of reproducing under there. And they, there's lots of different ways. They have this mimicry ability where that cell phone thing. So there's a, the vines actually reproduce the sound of a cell phone to entice the kids down into the pyramid because it makes them think that there's a working cell phone down there that they can use to call for help. There is not a working cell phone down there that they can use to call for help. Yeah, I mean, you're right that there's a lot of really good stuff here. And I think for me, there's just a huge, huge question mark hanging over the whole movie, which is what on earth are these natives doing? Like, they're doing the thing that the horror movie needs them to do to drive the plot forward. They're not doing the thing that any rational person would do, which is, hey, these vines are really, really dangerous. We should, you know, drop in some Agent Orange or in some way kill these things. You know,
well, like, here's my thought on that. I did think about it. Like, because as often happens, I had the same thought, but my brain goes, okay, what is the actual answer to that? And I think that for in this case, it could be one of a couple things. One, the site is holy. It is important to them, like from, you know, to their religion or whatever, somehow important that they not kill whatever it is, right? So there can be some sort of evil that requires, because human beings have made sacrifices to deities for, you know, for thousands of years. They don't try to kill the deity. They just do the sacrifice. So that's one solution. The other thing is that if you were to burn this, parts of it would fly up into the air and then spread. And so maybe they know that that's one way they can't actually compete this, and they just don't have a better solution.
I mean, maybe. I know that for me, their behavior felt very wonky and wrong, and I didn't like it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. The movie itself, I think, you know, it's a little ham-handed, I think, for the first 15 minutes or so when they're hanging out by the pool and the kids are, you know, interacting with one another. And, you know, there's like some super on the nose dialogue. Why are you guys here? Oh, they're best friends and we're their boyfriends. Right. And like, that's a nice little info dump, but it's so on the nose, you know, like,
really? I don't think so. That's how else would you say that? Like, I just have to say, I just watched last night another movie called No Way Up, which is the sharks on a plane movie I mentioned last week.
Yes, you told me
about
this.
So I finally watched it. And that movie had a lot of that clunky dialogue that is just like really bad and not thought out. And I was rewatching this movie thinking, I really like the subtlety of certain things. Like, there's a moment where one boyfriend and his girlfriend have a bet that if something happens, the winner gets oral sex, right? And so you kind of see them in the bedroom later talking about, well, I won the bet, and like, blah, blah, blah. And they kind of cut away from that. You don't see, it's not a super sexy movie. And then they show up at the door of their two friends, the other couple, and Jenna Malone opens the door and is like, why do you two look so happy? And there is no answer. It's just a cute little, like, I thought it was really well-crafted scripting, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're probably going to disagree
especially.
On this point. Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that gets you, like, a huge, you know, bit of credit, right? Like, I think you still have to write a good movie just because you're writing a horror movie. I don't know.
Okay.
It didn't do it for me, so...
Okay. And then the acting,
it was fine, right? Like, I wasn't mad about it or anything.
I believed everybody's fear and everybody's pain and everybody's, you know, confusion. I believed it. So I thought that was really
good.
I mean,
it's possible that we're getting into, you know, maybe this is just the type of horror that I don't like, right? Like,
okay.
There's a very, very impressive scene where the girl who gets the vines under her skin starts like cutting her own flesh off, right? And it's very impressive and it's very like horror-y, right? And that's good, right? But like, I don't get anything out of that scene, right? Other than like, ugh, oh God, she's cutting her own flesh, right? Like it's nasty and gross and yeah. I don't like it, right?
Right.
You know, and like there's no disrespect intended to the people that do enjoy that sort of thing, but it's just, it doesn't do it for me, right? It just makes me go, yuck.
Yeah, you know? I think for me, it was the actor's job to convincingly portray that escalation in her mindset. And I thought she did that very well. I thought it was scripted believably. Like, I believed that she got there based on what she was going through. And so she got to that moment where she just...
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it wasn't... Like, I don't think it wasn't believable, right? I just think that, like, I didn't like it. You know?
Here's something interesting. I found myself rooting against the survivor.
Yeah, that did feel random. Like, well, Jenna Malone is the biggest name in this, so I guess she's going to be the final girl.
I'm not sure she was. Everything kind of like random. Sean Ashmore was probably bigger at the time, but yeah, she was the lead girl, and you know, you always have to have a survivor. And it's funny because remembering watching this movie, I didn't remember that someone survived. I thought they all died, and I remembered being okay with it because of the danger of this getting out into the world. They kind of have to die, and like, and her escaping is bad for the world. And what's fun? There is apparently in the book, the way she dies is different. So in the book, she commits suicide outside the circle, like, you know, from the, like, she goes down and commits suicide in such a way that supposedly is sending a message to anybody who shows up. And then the plants basically pull her back into the, you know, hill. And,
you know, there's another way to send a message to the other people that show up. You could just like make some signs that say, hey, there's a deadly carnivorous plant here. Don't go. You know,
yeah, maybe they didn't have all
like
that equipment.
I think that's for me, I realize it's dumb, right? Because like there is a lot of this movie to enjoy, right? But for me, my dislike of this movie is summed up in the like complete avoidability of the whole situation, right? Just you know, they didn't like, I don't know, maybe the taxi driver maybe should have not been like, hey, everybody who goes up here dies, you know? Maybe
he
I won't
know
take
that much
it
about
even
it.
For
not
40
a native.
Bucks.
He just knows it's bad. He doesn't know. It's just a cursed. I felt better about the way that handled than if he had said, oh, there's a curse. It's an evil land, and we still have to get them up there. I liked how it went better.
No, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, you have to get them up there because it's a horror movie, right? And that's the answer. And I don't like that answer, you know? Okay. I don't like that answer.
Interesting. I'm still trying to decode you.
I will say, like, in the Descent, right, the answer is this girl thinks it's a good idea to take them in off their planned caving experience, right? And she has a reason why she thinks that's a good idea, right? This is just basically there's a bunch of small signs that are like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this, and they just do it anyways. And
but there is always that voice of reason. I think Jenna Malone usually, who's like, I don't want to do this. This is and it's the kind of the dumb boyfriends who, kind of true to, you know, male ego, are like, yeah, no, let's do this. And the main guy, I think they give him a good reason. His brother is there, and so he has to go. Not the main guy, but the German, he has to go there. And I felt myself putting myself in his shoes and being like, okay, I get that. I get his reason. And then for him to want to have company makes sense. And then for them just to want to have an adventure, it made sense to me.
Yeah.
You know. Can I tell you what the alternate ending was?
Oh, please do.
You care? It's basically, so she escapes, and that's in the, but the alternate ending is that she looks in the mirror to see if anybody's following her, and a little vine is under her, like, mm-hmm. under her skin or under her eye. And then I guess they cut to her, a caretaker at a cemetery going to take care of whatever, and he is taking care of a plot. And cuts himself on a vine, and they you see that it's her grave mm-hmm. and those vines growing out of her grave. Mm-hmm. So I'm about to take over the world. Which
I mean, that's
I think I don't like that. I wouldn't have liked
good,
that.
You know. Yeah, no, I mean, I like that, but I think you know, there is sort of the question too, like what happens next week, right? Okay, so the Mexican government realizes that. Two archaeologists and six tourists have just disappeared, and then they start investigating, and like they're gonna find this thing, right? like that's I don't know.
For the sequel.
It's a yeah.
Well, I did think find it was very fascinating for me to root against the because usually I hate the nihilistic endings where nobody wins, but I found myself rooting against the protagonist. So I thought that was interesting.
Sure.
All right. Well, okay. I've braced myself for the whatever score you're going to give this. What do you think?
No, I think you've convinced me that the quality of filmmaking is maybe better than I was giving it credit for. I actually looked back. I had given The Descent a 7, mostly for, I think, really affecting imagery and I think a plot that makes a little more sense than this. I think I'm gonna land on 5 for this again. You know, like this is it's a fine horror movie, but it's not something that I would recommend to someone. And it does feel very formulaic a lot of the time. And in order to follow the formula, some nonsensical stuff has to happen, in my opinion. Okay. Apparently you've got sensible reasons for all these things, but they don't make any sense.
All right. Well, I respectfully disagree. I'm going to give this an 8 for me. I really liked it, and this is probably the third time I've seen it, and I liked it equally every time.
Okay,
I find myself just surprised at how much I liked it. I found the acting and the filming it was just beautifully shot in a way that like it had a budget. It had a budget of like I think $25 million, so it was definitely it showed it.
I mean, for a horror film, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And the special effects are great. I believed that the flowers were real. I believed the vines. They did these little movements, these subtle movements on the vines.
Every once in a while, the CGI-ness of it popped through. But most of the time, it was really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Great. Well, what do you got for me for next week?
Next week, have you ever heard of the 1960s English band The Beatles?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Good.
You're not giving me the Beatles.
All right, so the Beatles, I'm absolutely giving you the Beatles. You told me to give
you
the Beatles.
Wow.
And I'm here.
You said you were never going to do it.
The Beatles.
Okay.
I said I was never going to do it, but one of our correspondents, I think it was Brian, convinced me that it was actually a good idea to give you the Beatles, and so I'm gonna do it. Now, the Beatles' career, they started out as like pop boys, right? Like basically the NSYNC of 1963 or 4 or whatever, right? And they landed as drug-addled weirdos in 1970, right? 6 short years. They released 12 studio albums in the UK, and right smack dab in the middle of their career, they have 2 albums, Rubber Soul and Revolver, that very much are on that transition from like pop frothiness to weird, heavy production, spacey, lot of drugs out there-ness, right? And I love these 2 albums. I'm only going to give you one of them. I'm going to give you Rubber Soul, okay? Which has some cool psychedelic logo or lettering on it, but is a little more straightforward than Revolver, which is is starting to get out there a bit, right? It's not like total musical experimentation like some of their later stuff, but it's starting to get out there a bit. So this is the, I think I want to say 1966 or 67 album, Rubber Soul. This is after the Beatles had stopped touring. They stopped touring because they logistically couldn't handle it anymore, right? Like nowadays, Taylor Swift can go anywhere in the world and money falls out of trees and they have giant, giant crews that can handle the logistics of someone that's that popular touring. But the stadiums weren't big enough. The airports weren't well set up to handle the fandom of the Beatles. And so they literally stopped touring right smack dab in the middle of their career. And this is the first album that they recorded after they had stopped touring and were able to just focus on the musicness of it. And so I really like this album. I hope you like it too. The Beatles, Rubber Soul.
Oh, my goodness. All right, great. Well, I'm going to give you, as I mentioned, a movie that was a Best Picture winner. And in fact, it won six Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Sound, and Best Film Editing. I say Best Sound twice because one was sound editing and the other was sound mixing. And it won... It does those. So it did all those. And then, yeah, it was also famously an early movie that won Best Director for a female director. And that director is Kathryn Bigelow. And the movie is The Hurt Locker. So I'm going to have you... The Hurt Locker is a another 2008 movie. And it's a war thriller. And it was about an Iraq war explosive disposal team who are targeted by the locals, and it's kind of the stress of combat, and it's very, very gritty, kind of a real look at the Iraq war. So great cast. Jeremy Renner is in it, Anthony Mackie, Evangeline Lilly, Ralph Fiennes, David Morse, Guy Pearce, a huge cast. Should be fun to see them all. I haven't seen this movie since it was on its awards run, I think. So it has been a good long time. I'm interested to revisit it, and I'm interested to see what you think.
Yeah, I've heard of this movie. I think it'll be really fun to see. Hey, the Broadway musical, the Broadway mounting of the musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch, I saw it on Broadway with Neil Patrick Harris in the lead role. And the conceit of that setup is that the only reason that the theater was available for Hedwig and the Angry Inch to perform is that Hurt Locker, the musical, had closed very quickly after opening. And so all of the they distribute programs for Hurt Locker, the musical, in the theater beforehand that you can pick up. And there also is the love theme. If you go to the Broadway cast recording of Hedwig and the Angry Inch with Neil Patrick Harris, not with John Cameron Mitchell, there is a song on there that is the love theme from The Hurt Locker. It's very funny. Oh God, it's so...
I had no idea that
on Broadway, there's like an exploding car on stage in Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's Hurt Locker amazing. The musical.
I'm excited to see the movie. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you like it better than the musical. It did have a decent budget on it. I think probably about $15 million, so less than the movie we just watched. And so we'll see.
Yeah. Hey, Travis, do you know that our listeners can talk to us by writing us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com or checking out our Facebook page at Exposing Ourselves?
I was aware of that, and if they also are listening this long, they might as well go give us a rating and a review on whatever app they're listening to their podcasts on. I think that would help us quite a bit, too.
That would probably do that.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Well, thank you for exposing yourself to me, Travis.
All right, thanks. I'll see you next week.